All right, we are in the chapter on Unit 2, Jewish Lifestyle and Traditions. And I was just started explaining that people call what we're going to start studying now holidays and festivals, but the biblical word is actually mo'adim, M-O-A-D-I-M, which is the plural for the word mo'ad. And you guys need worksheets, or are you ready to buy a book?
I'm not ready to buy a book.
Not ready to buy a book, okay. Here. Larry, can you get a couple to them? So, when we think of Mo'adim, people think of things like Rosh Hashanah, and you have some pens? Great. And, you know, Passover and things like that. But actually, in Jewish tradition, the most important Mo'ad of all the Mo'adim is Shabbat, which happens every week. So the first thing we're going to do, if you've got the sheet or if you've got your book, is we're going to take some time and study the Shabbat. Okay, so we'll start.
I have a real question.
You want to start?
Yeah.
Yes, I was going to go this way. So we want to start by reading Exodus chapter 31 and verse 13.
Should I start with 12? Then the Lord said to Moses,
okay,
say to Israelis, you must obey my Shabbat. This will be a sign between me and you for the generation to come, so you may know that I am the Lord who makes you holy. And the question, why did God command us to keep the Shabbat? Because, he said that it's going to be the sign between
Yes. So this is one of the reasons. I think it's pretty obvious to everyone that another reason is, well, you tell me, what's another reason that he created Shabbat?
Rest,
because we need the rest. He knows us. He knows that we need to rest. And even more than rest, really the Shabbat is a time to be spiritually refreshed. So again, he knows us so well that if we don't take a day to come into his presence and be with him, he knows that we wouldn't do it unless he commanded us to do it. So this is why he commanded it. Now, but I want to just take a minute and talk about this thing of it being a sign. And one of the things that we find is that all of the covenants have signs to them. And if I name a covenant, you'll tell me what the sign is. The covenant with Noah. What's the sign?
Rainbow.
A rainbow? Good. The covenant with Abraham. What's the sign?
Circumcision.
Circumcision, right. The covenant, the new covenant, what's the sign?
The whole blood.
The cross, I think. I mean, when you see a cross, that's
right.
That's actually the renewal meal. But the sign would be the cross. And, you know, when it says in, Yeshua said, they will see the sign of the Son of Man in the sky, that's, I believe that's what people are going to see. But, What we have here is that the Shabbat is a sign. So which covenant is it a sign of?
First covenant.
Okay, well, that would be with Adam.
The Mosaic covenant,
right. So the Shabbat is actually the sign of the Mosaic covenant or the Sinai covenant. And notice it says that it will be throughout all your generations. It will be a sign. And it just, when I first read this, it amazed me to think about how it's been a sign. Because here's how it's been a sign. If you go to any city and you find the Jewish community in that city, why are they together in a cohesive community? Why are they all living in the same neighborhood?
So they can walk to Shabbat.
So they can walk to services on Shabbat, because you're not supposed to walk further than a certain distance on Shabbat. So the sign of Shabbat caused the Jewish people, wherever they were scattered, to always live together. You see that? It's amazing. And it actually kept the Jewish people together through all of those two millennium, really, that we've been scattered around the world. Now, in addition to that, if you were to drive down Monroe Avenue in Saturday morning here in, mm-hmm. in Rochester, mm-hmm. what would you see?
A lot of people walking.
You'd see people walking to the synagogue. Mm-hmm. So the way that you can tell that there's a Jewish community is by the Shabbat. Mm-hmm. You know, on Wednesday or Thursday, you can't tell it's any different from any place else. But on Shabbat, when you drive down Monroe Avenue, you see, or Winton Road, you see people walking to synagogue because it's the Shabbat. So isn't that amazing? It's actually the sign.
What is the distance?
It's about 3/4 of a mile that you're allowed to walk. What happened was that, you know, when God gave the commandment, you shall not work, then people would have debates on, well, what is work? You know, and somebody would say, well, you know, if I have to walk from here to go there, that's work. But somebody else would say, well, you know, if I go out for a stroll, it's pleasure. So what eventually happened was that the rabbis, the judges, got together and they made this decree.
That's in the Talmud.
But interestingly, it's actually in the New Testament, because the term Sabbath day's journey is used in the New Testament, where it says they walked a Sabbath day's journey. It's that distance that you're allowed to walk on the Shabbat. So what happened with that was that a synagogue would be built here, and in a circle, one Sabbath day's journey around that synagogue, that's where the Jewish people would try to find places to live. Mm-hmm. And then if they got too, you know, overpopulated, and they built another synagogue, then another circle would form around that synagogue. And in an Orthodox community, they actually put up they string it from the telephone poles and the power poles. They string a piece of string with something on it so that people know where that border is.
Wow.
So that they know how far, you know, they can walk.
Like New York City.
Yeah, in places like New York where it's big. In Rochester, it's not like that. But if you go down Monroe Avenue, you know, there's Temple HaKnesses, there's St. Regis Temple, there's Beth Shalom. There's now a new Sephardic temple, and they're all there because that's where the Jewish community is, and the Jewish community formed there because that's where the temples were. And of course, go back a few decades, and the temples were in other parts of the city, like Joseph Avenue was a big Jewish neighborhood where there were synagogues there too. Okay. So it's the sign.
What's Sephardic?
Oh, I'm sorry. The Jewish people can be divided culturally into two groups. Ashkenazi, which are the people from Europe, and Sephardic are the Mediterranean Jewish people. So Spanish Jewish people from the Arab world, there were Jews in Iran and Iraq and Morocco. They are all Sephardic, and the biggest difference is the language. They use a different dialect. No, it's Hebrew. When they speak Hebrew, they use a different dialect of Hebrew. And actually, Israel, when they rejuvenated the Hebrew language, they brought it back to life, they chose the Sephardic dialect. And the reason they did that is that the Ashkenazi Jews had stopped speaking in Hebrew for a long time, whereas the Sephardic Jews, they still spoke in Hebrew a little bit, so that there was more modern. There was, you know, the problem with a language when it dies is new things are invented, and it doesn't, you don't get those words. And so the Sephardic was more up to date, and they took the Sephardic. So like when I was a child and when I learned Hebrew, the pronunciation I learned was Ashkenazi. But modern Hebrew is not like that. There's differences. We'll see some of those differences. Even in the word Shabbat, like in Ashkenazi, it's Shabbos.
Right.
Where in Sephardic, it's Shabbat. And those are, we'll see in these holidays especially, there's some of these switches.
Yeah, there's so many Ashkenazis, they just speak Yiddish instead of Hebrew.
Right, Yiddish replaced Hebrew as a spoken language amongst
like
the,
in Ukraine, like
they're speaking Yiddish.
Mainly, yeah.
Right. And Yiddish, just as long as we're on languages here, Yiddish is like derived from German, but they use the Hebrew alphabet. So when you write Yiddish, you write it just like Hebrew, but it's not Hebrew. It's more like German.
Yeah.
And it actually was a very powerful thing, because one of the things that I understood was that part of the reason that Jewish people became like the merchants, the traders of Europe, was because they could understand each other. And so a Jew from, you know, Germany could understand a Jew from Italy because they spoke Yiddish. And the other people couldn't understand each other, so they couldn't train.
It was like similar to German, but it's not really German, so the
right.
German people would not understand what they talked.
Yes, like, yes. So they could also be secret
yeah.
about what they were saying. But the main thing was they were able to do the trade because they could talk to each other, and the other people couldn't because they had language differences.
Years ago, I saw on TV they had Yiddish theater.
Yes, it was huge. Yiddish theater was a big, around the time when vaudeville was big, there was also Yiddish theater in New York City and other in Europe, you know, centers of Judaism. Yeah, a lot of that, right?
Now it's dying out.
It's dying out, right, because people like my parents spoke Yiddish. My grandparents came over from Poland, and they spoke more Yiddish than English. And my parents knew Yiddish, but they always spoke English because they were born here. And then when they wanted to say something that I wouldn't understand, they spoke Yiddish. So I started to learn a little bit, but I know very little.
Swedish. Your mother and father would speak Swedish.
To keep it from you? Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Something else I saw here in verse 13, that he commanded us to keep the Sabbath, the Shabbat, because it's the very last few words in the interpretation I have, it says, so you may know that I am the Lord who makes you holy.
Yes, yes. Or set apart, or consecrated.
So that's part of the spiritual sanctification.
Right.
Yeah, that's not a spiritual
right.
refreshing. I see it as just, like you said, sanctification, and it's just encouragement to be holy.
Right. And part of being holy, I believe a very important part, is to take one day a week and set it aside for the Lord. He commanded us to do that. So if we're not doing it, it's not holy. And so he, you know, that's part of the keeping yourself in the Lord's ways by reading His Word and being, you know,
and
doing spiritual things, right?
Making one day do better.
Right. Okay, verse 16 of the same chapter. Albert, do you want to read that one?
Yeah. The Israelites are to observe the Sabbath, celebrating it for the generation to come as a lasting covenant.
Okay, and the question?
For how long are we to keep Shabbat? Forever.
Yeah, so it's something that is eternal. And here's where we begin to see, you know, the thing that Allison alluded to of how the church has changed things. These are the kind of things that really are significant. If God told the Jewish people to keep Shabbat forever, and then the Jewish people were the beginnings of the church, and they, of course, were keeping Shabbat, then how did it happen that suddenly it gets changed to another day? And Jewish people who wanted to be part of the church were forbidden to keep Shabbat because that was a sign that they had not given up on their Judaism and converted to Christianity. So we can see how this became a conflict. We'll see that with the others there. So, Nate, Exodus chapter 20, a few chapters back. Actually, this is in this week's Parsha, the reading for this week. It's in the Ten Commandments. We're going to read the Ten Commandments. This part of the Ten Commandments.
Can I say something?
Sure.
In verse 17, it says, it's a sign between me and the children of Israel forever.
Yes.
Is the answer.
So the sign is there twice.
And it says, in 6 days the Lord made heaven and earth, and the seventh day he rested. So there's the rest.
Yes.
And was refreshed, and there's the refresh.
Mm-hmm.
So that answers both of them.
Mm-hmm. And actually, that is going to be repeated, some of that in Exodus 20, in one of the Ten Commandments. So Nate?
Okay. Exodus 28. Remember the Sabbath day and keep it holy. For 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is a Sabbath for Yahweh your God.
Keep going through verse 11.
You shall do no work that day, neither you nor your son nor your daughter nor your servants, men or women, nor your animals, nor the stranger who lives with you. For in 6 days Yahweh made the heavens and the earth, and the sea, and all that these hold. But the seventh day he rested. That is why Yahweh has blessed the Sabbath day and made it sacred.
Okay. You want to try the question there?
Okay, we are...
Right, read the question so everybody is on the
same. What are we commanded to do and not to do on Shabbat? Well, we shall not work,
mm-hmm.
and we shall rest.
Okay.
And I guess you're not supposed to do any kind of business at all. Or whatever.
Right.
That's work.
Okay, anybody else see anything, other things it says we're to do?
Keep the Sabbath.
Keep it holy. And there's many translations of that. Set it apart is the one that I have here. Anybody else have any other translations for keeping it holy? It's in the in verse 11. Verse 8, rather.
Set it apart.
Set it apart. Set it apart. And set it apart for God, actually, is how it says it here. So that gives us, yeah, I think, you know, holy is kind of a, I don't know, a theological word that people, well, what does that mean? Keep it holy. You think more about, you know, what you should do and what you shouldn't do. But when you say set it apart for God, that's really different. That means you're setting it aside to spend time with God and to worship Him.
For a whole day?
For a whole day. Yeah, that's what it says.
Was it until sunrise?
Well, understand also that the Jewish understanding of the day, which is strange, but I'll explain how they got that understanding, is from sundown to sundown, okay? And, you know, you might think that that's strange, but the reason it's that time is because in the Genesis account, it always says it was evening and it was morning the first one day. So, therefore, the Jewish people say, well, that means we start the day at sundown and we end the day at sundown. So yeah, that's the way it is. Actually, if you think about it, when we start our day, it's really kind of weird,
yeah.
Right? Because it's like in the middle. It's 12 hours from noon. It's like in the middle of the night. So it's like, who came up with that idea?
You know, how the Orthodox do it?
Huh?
Can they actually function in this society and do that?
Oh. Sundown to sundown. Yes.
It still can. You can.
Yes,
function?
And in Israel, everything starts shutting down at about 3 o'clock. People start preparing so that they're, you know, they don't want to be driving home after sundown. So they start going home. And I remember I read a book by Senator Joe Lieberman, and he is an Orthodox Jew. And so when the Congress would be meeting on Friday, he always had to leave at like 3 o'clock. And there were times when things were so important that he felt like it was more important to stay. So here's where it gets weird. Instead of driving home, because you're not supposed to drive on the Shabbat, he would walk home because it was Shabbat. But it was 6 miles. And he's a senator, so the Secret Service had to accompany him. And they would accompany him. They weren't going to walk. They would accompany him driving in the car. So this is an example of how the wisdom of men gets the Word of God confused, because I mean, to me, it's obvious that, you know, if a man had to stay to serve his country, and he should drive home and not have to walk 6 miles. Walking 6 miles, have you ever walked 6 miles? That's a chore.
You get a
chore.
I got something here from Genesis about what you said about the evening.
Okay.
It says, right here in Genesis, says, God said, let there be light, and there was light. God saw that light was good, and God divided the light from darkness. God called light day, and darkness He called night. Then evening came and morning came the first day. So mm-hmm. I think that I was told that's where it came from.
Yeah, that's what I said.
Yeah,
that's exactly what I said.
Where's the Genesis
one? Genesis
first
1.
Is right there, Genesis number 3.
1-3.
Yeah,
evening and morning.
Right, the first paragraph.
Right. So that's the way, and this is where all of the customs that you might be familiar with, like lighting the candles as the sun sets, that's because we're commanded not to light a fire during Shabbat, so we light the candles before Shabbat begins, so that you have light in the house, you know, because it doesn't say you can't have a candle lit, it says you shouldn't be kindling a fire. So that's where that we came from. Huh? Because that would, well, back then it was work. Again, that's one of those judgments of how do we carry this out. Today it's not work, you just flip a switch. But back then, you had flint and, you know, flint and steel, and you had to rub them together. I guess you didn't have steel because that wasn't invented until much later. But two rocks that you had to rub together to get a spark. It was a lot of work to make a fire. So that was part of the reason.
I think the Lord would allow you to drive home.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, next question on there. Julia, who else is to rest?
Who else is to rest?
Yeah, according to this passage. Well, God said he rested during creation on the seventh day, right? But there's specifically other people or other entities or beings are told are to rest also besides you.
Thy son, thy daughter, thy
right.
manservant, thy maidservant, cattle, and stranger.
Okay, so the point here is that you're not to be like the lord of the manor and say, well, today's my day of rest, but all you my servants have to work. And even the animals are mentioned here because they used animals to plow and, you know, carry burdens. So the animals are not to work on the Shabbat either.
Keeps them alive, too. Gives them a little longevity.
Yes, right. They need the rest, too. Okay, next question. David.
Number five?
Yes.
What does this commandment imply concerning doing things that require other people to work on the Shabbat?
Well, we kind of covered it already. So anybody else want to jump in here?
Would that be the visitors in your house?
Yeah, well, basically it's saying you shouldn't
allow anyone.
You shouldn't have your employees be working, you know. And this is, again, is a difficult one. For instance, my family, we usually go out to get something to eat after the service on Shabbat. And I guess the way we've dealt with that is we've said, well, they're going to be open anyway. They're not Jewish. They're running this restaurant. So we'd feel okay about going out and, you know, eating. But I wouldn't hire a contractor and have them, you know, working on my house in Shabbat or something like that. And let me say at this point that as we're going through this, some of you might be having a struggle because you do things like this on Shabbat. You guys, because your store is open on Saturday. So understand that the Lord is gracious and he will show you what you're supposed to do. But there have been many people who have become part of the congregation that gradually over time get convicted and say, well, perhaps the Lord wants me to change something here because of this. And I can tell you what the testimony has been is that when people do it, he blesses them even more. And, you know, that's
the business day of the week.
So yeah, I know. I know. Everybody owns a business. And actually, you know, my daughter, she can't get out of working. On Saturday. She's been working on Saturday, and people who have businesses in our culture, it's very difficult. So I don't want to make anybody feel like they're being judged or, you know.
Before I start reading, he's like, I don't work, and then I went and I'm like, and no one who works for you? Like,
yes. Uh-oh.
Like, that's why I have employees
work.
I don't work on Saturday. So you know that what Alan does, and I've learned to do this with him by learning to honor Shabbat, is we don't even exchange money. So there's no purchasing of anything because it's making, because you're doing.
That's another Jewish tradition,
that's
right?
That's another Jewish tradition of just not doing, not purchasing anything.
Right.
So if we go to a show, the tickets are prepaid in advance. It's within walking distance.
Okay.
So, or if it's a special dinner, if it's prepaid in advance,
well, these are ways that Jewish people
ways
have dealt with
getting
it.
Around but, it, which I've learned, right. Like, wow, okay. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You can come there on Friday and just sleep over. Like,
yeah. Well, and this is actually something really big in the Jewish community. Back when, before there were automatic thermostats, and people had to go put coal in the furnace and stuff in cold climates, what the Jewish people do is they would hire a non-Jew
right.
who would come in and put the coal in the furnace. and turn on the lights and do things like that. And of course, they wouldn't pay them on that day; they'd pay them some other day. So
right, that would be the same as working. Someone like saying you're a slave, come and work.
Yeah, yeah. So, well, for you guys and for others, you know, I want to say we leave it up to the individual to sort this out with God. It's important to know what the Bible says. But God is also a God of timing, and he doesn't like always uproot things completely and change people's lives. So God will show you, is all I can say, if this is something you're supposed to do.
What I've done is when I've had to work on Saturdays, I made sure that I kind of split my Sabbath. Mm-hmm. So I would do some of it on Saturday, and then when I had to work, I would take that time that I had to work, and I'd bump it to Sunday. And literally do nothing but read, study, pray, or just try to, you know, that's what I did personally, so that I could kind of temper it so that I kept a 24-hour Sabbath, but sometimes it had to be broken up a little bit. I mean, right. It's just something that may help you, but it's something you just have to take to the Lord to do.
And for me, actually, for what I do, I don't start my Sabbath until about 1 o'clock on Saturday. Because leading the service and teaching, that's work. So I can even feel it. I don't feel like relaxed until I get home and kick my shoes off.
They're not in the office on Mondays because they take their Sabbath on Monday because
right.
they're
and
teaching
pastors,
and preaching. The pastors,
pastors
on Sundays,
do the same thing. Right.
And they're working
right.
on Saturdays preparing
right.
for their service.
Right.
So they take Monday as their Sabbath.
Yeah. So pray about your business. Don't make any rash decisions.
Don't make it legalistic.
Yeah. And God will show you.
But it falls right into what you're saying, falls right into a conversation or a class that we had where Saturday and Sunday in the New Covenant, that it does not dispute that there's almost like a compound Sabbath. Remember we had that discussion?
Mm-hmm.
Where Saturday and Sunday were somehow merged.
I don't know what you're saying.
I thought we had that conversation.
Not me. Uh-uh.
Yeah.
No. In fact, I was going to say the last part of this verse 11. You know, because one of the things that the church has done, and this is somewhat to the church's credit, but again, it came out of this wanting to not be Jewish anymore, was to move the Sabbath from Saturday to Sunday. So before I became involved in a Messianic congregation, we were part of a church, and they taught very strongly, Sunday's the day of rest, you should spend it with family, you shouldn't be working, and they had two services, one in the morning, one in the evening, so you could come to both, and that's all good. But the issue is verse 11, because in verse 11, it says very clearly, for in 6 days the Lord made heaven and earth, the sea and everything in them, but on the seventh day he rested. This is why the Lord blessed the day, the Shabbat, and separated it for himself. So, yes, that's very nice to take the Sabbath on Sunday, but that's not the day the Lord blessed to be the Sabbath. So I always feel like, well, yeah, you can do that, but why would you want to do that when God said he blessed this day?
Right.
You know, and made it a day that he ordained for people to take a rest, and you know, we've switched it to this other day, which, like I said, it's good at least they take a day, but you know, it kind of, that verse is very convicting to me.
One of the things, Exodus chapter 20, verse 7, on the first day of the week when they were gathered together to break bread, I've heard interpretation the first day of the week is after the sun goes down, so it's still up.
Yes, it's actually Saturday night.
So we have a Shabbat meal on Friday and the end of the Shabbat meal on Saturday.
And in that passage, you're looking at the book of Acts, right?
Right.
They were still following Jewish tradition, which is to have a gathering at the end of the Sabbath.
Right.
Which would be the first day of the week. Like at sundown, and of course, if you read on there, it talks about Paul preaching, and it's so long that somebody fell asleep.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he didn't start preaching in the morning, and the guy fell asleep. He started preaching at night, because you got to think in a Jewish way that the day starts at sundown. Well, people have used it for Sunday worship, but it doesn't make any sense when you look at it from the context of the culture that they were living in.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Which is that they would have said that the Sunday starts at sundown on Saturday night.
Then there was that argument that Christ was crucified on the Passover, and he rose from the dead 3 days later, which was Sunday.
Well, he rose on Sunday because it says it's the first day of the week.
So,
no question about that.
With all the scriptural passages, there's
Well, the church justified switching it to Sunday by saying, well, it was the day the Lord rose. But there's nothing in the Bible that says you should worship on the day that the Lord rose.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
Or set it apart. It's just the day that the Lord rose. It was a Sunday. And it actually was a Jewish holiday. It was the day of first fruits. So, John?
I just have a quick question. So in Israel, to celebrate Shabbat, they go to the service on Friday and Saturday? Or?
Well, on Friday night, typically in the Jewish culture, you don't celebrate the Shabbat on Friday night in the synagogue. You do it at home. So people have a Shabbat meal, and then after the meal they go to the synagogue to have the worship service. And then also on Saturday morning they have a service, and Saturday afternoon, and then this is the Orthodox, they have like all these services. And then at sundown there's something called a Havdalah service, which is the end of the Sabbath. And then there's usually the meal after the Havdalah service, right? And the Orthodox community here pretty much keeps that same thing. But in Israel, the most interesting thing is that because the religious Jewish people have had a lot of influence in Israel, after sundown, none of the public transportation runs. So you've got to be home. So you got to, like if you have a business, you got to close early enough to pack up, close down, and then get on the bus and get home before sundown, which of course is a moving target as the year changes. You know, everybody stays aware of when sundown is in January versus June. It's very different, you know.
When we flew back here Friday, we had to be back before 5 o'clock.
Ah, so that he wouldn't
he
be flying
fly
on Shabbat.
Right, on Shabbat, or travel on Shabbat.
Right.
So we had to make sure that we were back.
Right.
And I've got to tell you guys, since I have been learning to honor Shabbat, all of these blessings that are happening, I think it's timing. Like you were saying, the blessings are coming because I'm learning how to better keep the Sabbath than I have been in the past.
Wow.
For me.
Yeah. So you want to hear some of the ultimate irony here of how the Messianic movement has struggled through these things, because when the Messianic movement first started, most of the people had been in churches for a while. So we decided, or they was decided, I didn't decide, but the leadership decided that we would have a rabbi's conference. And when would it start? Saturday evening. So what does that mean? That means the people who are rabbis, well, they have the Saturday morning service, and then they hop on a plane and they can get down to this conference that starts Saturday evening. And it's been going on for like 20 years, and just recently we have like an email forum. And people are saying, why are we starting this Saturday night? You know, most of us don't want to travel on Sabbath.
That's right.
And here we have to get, in fact, with the change in the airlines, you pretty much can't get down there if you leave after your service. You have to leave early in the morning to get to the place where this conference is being held. So praise God, next year the conference is starting on Sunday.
What happens when you go through time? Like, can you really get... and say, let's use the time.
The time zone changes?
Yeah, what happens to go through?
Everybody's got to do it based on their local time.
Now you're 3 days, you're a day off.
Yeah, no, you do it based on your local time.
Local time.
Yeah. So, but if you're an Orthodox Jew, you would not fly to somewhere where you become whatever time zone you're in, that it would be in the Sabbath. You schedule your flight for a different day of the week.
Okay.
All right. So, yeah. Okay. Let's see. We've got some time to move on. What event? Okay, sure.
What event is the Sabbath commemoration of?
Uh-huh.
I might be wrong, but it's the seventh day God rested himself. It's a commemoration of the seventh day that he rested.
Right. So it's creation. Is actually what it's commemorating. So this is actually pretty significant, because it kind of makes the Shabbat not a Jewish thing, because it way precedes the Mosaic Covenant or the Sinai Covenant. God saying, I rested on the seventh day before I gave the new laws to Moses. It's just the seventh day.
But it's also the Mosaic, the fact that the Jews were freed from Exodus, it was also, that's the sign of the Mosaic Covenant.
Actually, we're going to read that verse in the next verse there.
It's in Deuteronomy.
So let's read that next one. Catherine, can you read that? Deuteronomy 5, verse 15.
Okay, remember that, well, I have King James Version, okay? Remember that thou was a servant in the land of Egypt, and that the Lord your God brought you out thence through a mighty hand and by an outstretched arm. Therefore the Lord thy God commanded thee to keep the Sabbath.
Mm-hmm. So now if you would read the question, or the question there after that verse.
What other event is the Sabbath a commemoration of, and the children being brought out of Egypt?
Yeah, because it's freedom. See, they weren't allowed to have a day of rest when they were slaves. And so this is I'm bringing you out, you are now given a day of rest.
That's what he kept asking the Pharaoh, can we go out and worship our God?
Right.
And he said no.
Right. So when I say the word commemoration, creation, and Exodus, remember the word commemorate, it means to remember. It's the same root as remember. So it's a day to remember the creation. It's a day to remember being freed from slavery, the Exodus, and it's a sign. Okay, and let's see. Sharon, did you want to read the next one? Nehemiah 13, verse 15.
In those days, I saw in Judah some people treading wine presses on the Sabbath and bringing in sheaves and loading donkeys with wine, grapes, figs, and all kinds of burdens, which they brought into Jerusalem on the Sabbath day. And I warned them about the day on which they were selling provisions.
And the question?
What else are we not to do by himself?
Yeah, so this is the instruction. This was actually Nehemiah who was in charge of the city, and it, basically it's buying and selling, but it means doing business.
Which is an exchange of money.
It's an exchange of money, yes. But they were treading wine presses, they were carrying the loads into the city, and so the whole thing is work.
Mm-hmm. So when you go to a restaurant, you have to pay for your
meal. Right. So there you have to make a halakhic decision as to which is the higher priority. And so for me personally, I found that the higher priority is to have the fellowship that enables. Now there are people who won't do that, and they'll only, you know, go to people's houses or have some sort of meal here after the service. But we actually have a long tradition of going out after the service here. So the Lord could change us at some point, but that's what we've been doing. Okay, we are up to Kim. Do you want to read Exodus 35, verse 3? Go ahead, Kim.
You shall kindle no fire throughout your habitations on the seventh day.
Okay, and the question?
No light.
You're not supposed to kindle a fire.
Yeah.
Okay, now it specifically says kindle, meaning that you can have a fire burning, but you're not supposed to make a fire. Okay, now this has had a profound influence on the whole Jewish community, this little commandment, because as technology developed, the rabbis, the religious leaders, had to decide if that technology was actually kindling a fire. And so the biggest thing that this hasn't affected is the internal combustion engine and the automobile. And so if you've ever wondered why Jewish people won't drive on Shabbat, it's because the internal combustion engine is setting off a spark, and that's, they've interpreted it as lighting a fire.
You do get thousands and thousands and thousands at times.
Yes, right. And so this is why, you know, the thing we talked about people living within a radius of a walk to the synagogue, you say, well, why don't they just drive? Well, the Orthodox interpret that to mean that you should not drive. We have not interpreted it that way. Again, and let me give a little more understanding of this. What we'll find here is that oftentimes that you find that two of God's laws, they contradict each other, or there's a problem keeping one and not the it violates another. Okay, so in this context of this, God commanded us, and we haven't read it yet, but we'll see it later, Leviticus 23, it says you are to have a holy convocation on Shabbat. You're to get together, okay? And so now if we're living in places where we're not within walking distance of each other, what the rabbis decided was a walking distance, we couldn't get together. And so we in the Messianic movement, at least this congregation, maybe others have not, but we've said we will have a parking lot. Okay, so that if people who want to come and fulfill the commandment of having a holy convocation on Shabbat, they can drive here. Now, in an Orthodox congregation, an Orthodox synagogue, you can go visit them, there is no parking lot. Mm-hmm. Okay, for that very reason, because they want to discourage people from driving. So it's interesting, if you go by like one of the Orthodox synagogues on Saturday, you'll see a lot of cars parked on the street around them. Well, what they do is they drive there for the Friday evening service, and they leave the car, and they walk home, and then they go to services on Saturday evening, and then they can drive home. So they save two walks that way. But what the really important principle here is this principle, and I'll give you a word for it. The Hebrew word is halakha, and what it means in literally is to walk. Halakha means to walk. And what its meaning is, though, is that how are we to walk out the commandments of God? How are we to make, what judgments are we to make as to which commandment takes priority? And we do this in our culture, too, because all of you are going to go home by automobile tonight, right? And when you come to an intersection and there's a red light, what do you have to do?
Stop.
Have to stop. But if you were an ambulance driver, what would you do?
You would slow down.
Turn on that siren, and you would go through. So why? Well, because it's more important to save a life than to stop at a red light. So there's a halakha. That's a halakha decision. Do you see that? The law of saving someone's life takes precedence over the law of stopping at a red light. So in our walk with the Lord, what we find is that there's times where we have to make decisions like that, and the desire, our desire is that we would be led by the Spirit of God in how to make those decisions. What we found is that in the Jewish community, they've made these decisions centuries ago, but when you look at the decisions, oftentimes it doesn't look like they were led by the Spirit of God. And of course, that's kind of to be expected, because if they've rejected Yeshua as the Messiah, then the Holy Spirit's not leading them. So they're making decisions about things. So we, in the Messianic movement, tend to look at each law and say, God, show me which law takes priority in these cases. So we don't do things necessarily like the Orthodox. For instance, we have a bookstore here that is open on Shabbat. Well, why do we do that? Well, because we feel that it's more important to make the Word of God and spiritual materials available to people when they're here than it is to keep the commandment not to buy and sell and not to exchange money. We take up an offering on Shabbat. That's handling money. And why do we do that? Well, in the temple times, people brought offerings on Shabbat. Okay, so we don't agree with what the rabbis have said about that. That if you're bringing money to give it to God, that's okay to do that on Shabbat. So you'll see that happening as you study these things. And it's a very important principle because it's the difference between being led of the Spirit and legalism. And it's very easy, as probably Allison, I'm sure, is finding, that a lot of the stuff that you find if you really get to know people in the Jewish community, it's very much rules and regulations. There's hundreds of rules about how to keep the Shabbat. And you can get to where we'll study this. We don't have time today because we're going to stop soon. But we'll get to this a little bit later, that how Yeshua dealt with the Shabbat is a fascinating study because it's the main source of conflict between him and the Pharisees. It's really the reason they decided that they wanted to kill him. Because because he refused to keep Shabbat the way they had decided it was supposed to be kept.
Right.
And so he was constantly violating their rules. And he speaks very strongly about it and gives these same kind of guidelines for how we're to keep it. But this is an example of it.
He did the ambulance driver. He saved someone's life.
He saved people's lives, yeah.
Which
right.
was more important.
Right, and they got in his case for it. We're going to read about this later, for healing someone on the Shabbat. And he said, you know, that's not how I understand how it's supposed to be. And that's where he said things like, I am the Lord of the Shabbat,
yeah.
Which really got him into trouble. Meaning, I made the Shabbat. I'm God come as a man. I made Shabbat, so I am the one who can tell you how to do it. You know, which is pretty brash.
One of the things that I found really interesting is Alan, as an Orthodox Jew, doesn't drive a car, but he will see patients on Saturday when he's on call, or if he has a patient that has an emergency.
Yes.
And I'm like, and I asked him that question, and he said, in Judaism, the Orthodox Jews especially, life is more important
yes.
than anything else.
Right.
So preservation of life comes forward first.
Right. And if a doctor,
and he's a doctor,
if
and
it,
so you will break, he will break Shabbat
right.
to save a life, which with what he does, he's an eye doctor. So it's if he has to do something to save someone's eye, that's like saving
a life.
And
right.
It's helping
right.
promote life.
And so a Jewish doctor, an Orthodox Jewish doctor, if he's walking down the street and somebody collapses, he is allowed to treat that person,
right.
even though it's his work. But he's not allowed to put up his office hours and say, you know,
right.
9 to noon on Saturdays. right?
right?
You see the difference
yeah.
there. But again, that's those halakhic.
But he will drive to the office and he will treat the patient on Shabbat.
Okay, because he has to get there.
That's right.
So he's making halakhic decisions. Those are great examples of halakhic decisions. We're gonna study a lot about them as
just
we
get it. Going back to the Old Testament, it says you must not light a fire. That's where it all started, right?
Mm-hmm.
On the Sabbath day. So if these are the Israelites, they're keeping the Sabbath when they left Egypt. They
mm-hmm.
kept the Sabbath, right? Every in
right.
the desert.
Right. Right.
So how did they deal with like cold nights and keeping warm? Did they leave?
You're allowed
the
to have a fire burning.
They left
just,
it burning.
Yeah, absolutely.
So they piled a lot on earlier.
Right.
And they would not start a new fire.
Right.
Okay.
And that's why I was saying before automatic thermostats came along in the Jewish communities like in America, they would hire somebody who is not Jewish to come in and,
right.
and stoke the fire or put more coals on the fire.
Well, that always gets
but
yeah.
light them by a pillar of fire by night.
Yeah.
That could have warmed them too. Right, right. Right, and actually, that's probably it because there wasn't much wood out in the
God
desert.
Right.
right, where were they going to find wood out in the desert? No. All right, any other questions? I think we should stop. It's about 9:15. Okay, good discussion. We'll pick up, where did we stop?
Number 10.
Isaiah 58.
That's
verse
13.
That's
almost the whole chapter.
I have a question.
Yes, Karen.
We said that you could hire somebody to do something. Is there anything like if you consider it a sin, you're causing somebody else to? I mean, if you ask me to come and light, you know, you have a fire.
Well, yeah, okay.
Are,
here's where
mind,
we get into.
Are you causing me to sin?
Here's where we get into the Shabbat was given to Israel, okay, not to the Gentile world. And this is also a very controversial thing, because there's many people that feel that everybody should keep the Shabbat because it's a spiritual practice. Okay. Other people feel that it was only given to Israel, so it's okay to keep it on a different day or not to keep it at all if you're not Jewish. So that's a big controversy. So in the Jewish community, they would hire somebody who's not Jewish to come in and put coals on the fire so that they could have heat at night.
But they
okay.
don't feel that they're causing somebody else.
No,
to sin.
Because they're not keeping the Shabbat anyway. And especially, you know, in the Western world where the church was keeping Sunday. So, you know, that would be fine. That's not their Sabbath.
Oh, okay.
I also saw some Orthodox, they don't use the phone or
right.
electricity or
right.
They do feel the lights on.
Leave them on. And one of the most interesting ones is in Israel, and again this has to do with the technical understanding that when you connect an electrical circuit, that's actually kindles a fire. Okay. So in Israel, if you go to a hotel and it's Shabbat, the elevators are programmed to stop at every floor.
They do that in New York City too.
So you don't have to press the button.
No.
They're still making
contact. Now we have an electrician who's saying, "Oh, this doesn't work." Yeah. So maybe it's the pushing the button that's the work. But yeah. That's,
but they don't even have to push a button when they get in the elevators, because the elevators automatically
stop
on every single floor.
But Nate's saying, as electrician,
yeah, the
there are circuits
still
being.
Still heating up.
Well,
there
are,
that's what we've been told, because when we went to visit our family in Israel, and on Saturday they would keep the door open, like if you will go to the main building, usually you'll have to ring the or put the code wherever, and they said they will keep the door open because you have
keep
to
it
so you don't have to punch in the security code
find the number, because this is work.
So you can see where this goes. It can get very consuming and legalistic.
Yeah.
And we want to avoid that, because the Sabbath was made, this is what, I'm getting ahead of myself here, but Yeshua said, because this is amazing, 2,000 years ago, it had already become so legalistic that it became a burden. And that's when Yeshua said the Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath. And basically he was saying, your tradition has made you a slave to the Sabbath, because you have to do this, and you have to not do this, and you have to keep all these rules. And he was saying it should be your delight and your rest, not your burden to do this, which is what it's become.
People
so.
Are stressing.
Yeah, it's stressful. Yeah, right.
Well, it's pretty strong language when you say this man must be put to death, you know, if he breaks the Sabbath. That's
right.
Strong language.
Well, that's how adamant they were about it, because he was teaching the people against their way. Their interpretations of how to keep the Sabbath, right? So.
And he was put to death. So.
Yeah.
But like you said, you let somebody else do it. You let the Romans do it.
Mm-hmm.
It's weird. Why didn't the Jews just take care of it in house?
They couldn't.
God
the Romans.
Was in control.
No, it wasn't. It was God who was in control, but the Romans did not allow them to execute people.
Oh.
The Romans had a policy wherever they conquered, that the conquered people, that where they were occupying, they could punish other crimes, but they couldn't have capital punishment.
Oh, wow.
That was left up to the Romans.
Or in other words, if they could have,
they
would have
done
it in the house.
But they were not. It says that in the Gospels. You know,
yeah.
We are not allowed.
So that way, they took them
to Pilate.
First.
To Pilate.
Right.
They had Pilate had to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Right. 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 Which is, you know, it's so, again, the sign or the. The prophetic sign of it, that it was both Jews and Gentiles that killed him, not just Jews. Because
right.
It was actually Roman soldiers that executed him, but it was Jews that plotted against him. So,
right.
You know, it was both. So,
Jews condemned them. The Romans did the physical.
Right. And actually the Romans, Pilate was really not fulfilling his duty. His duty was to see justice was done. And he knew this was not justice. He says it. But he went along with it because he was afraid there would be a riot.
Yeah.
So they were both guilty. Every
white man agreed.
Right. right.
More legalism.
So do you think, like, I was always thinking about that, like, when she had a dream and stuff, because I was picturing her as being, like, you know, worshiping all different gods, like Roman gods,
mm-hmm.
and how is that, you know, that she had a dream and then she came and stole him? Like, it's so hard to understand.
Yeah, she was a pagan, right?
Yeah.
She had a pagan dream.
Well, she had the dream. It was a real dream. And she tried to warn her husband, but because her husband ignored the dream, he was guilty. I mean, if she hadn't had the dream, he would be less guilty. But because he ignored the dream, he was guilty. And the reason he ignored the dream was to save his butt, because he knew that if there was a riot, he might lose his position and, you know, he could lose control. Mm. So it was a big political thing, too.
Yeah.